Days versus McKudick, Mr. Geyer.
I guess now it's good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Dave Geyer. I represent Robert Mikituck in the appeal that's before this court. There are basically three issues before this court. Two of them have to do with the search warrant. The third issue has to do with the application of Booker and whether or not the guidelines are severable in that this case should be remanded to the district court for a determination without enhancements, namely that the guidelines do apply and that they're...
Well, that issue is before the Supreme Court, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's my understanding the Supreme Court took that for review, so I don't...
I'll leave it on a very fast track.
Yeah.
I understand that, Your Honor. So I don't know where the court wants to take that. If the court is not going to want to take that issue because it's at the Supreme Court, we'll just focus on...
Well, I don't think we want to decide it. You know, throw it out, but we're not going to decide it, I don't think, until the Supreme Court...
Then the issue then still would be whether or not Mr. Mikituck's sentence should be remanded based upon Booker, because his...
Is in suspended animation.
Okay.
Right.
Let's go into course.
Certainly, Your Honor.
Because part of your argument is that course was too recent for the state officers to have recently known about it. And in your opinion, what is a reasonable length of time for law enforcement officers to respond to developments in the law?
It's my belief, Your Honor, that given the nature of law enforcement is that the police department isn't a separate entity unto itself, but rather there's the district attorney's office, there's the U.S. attorney's office, that law enforcement officers should be appraised of changes in the law immediately. Factors such or cases such as Miranda versus Arizona. I'm a little young for that, but I'm assuming that the police officers learned rather quickly that they had to give out Miranda rights.
Well, those are Supreme Court decisions.
I understand, Your Honor. This is a Seventh Circuit Court decision, so this was the state of Wisconsin was falling within that. The issue, I believe, really here, Your Honors, is that the Detective Hagen presented an affidavit to the magistrate, presumably typed up by the district attorney's office.
Does one court of appeals decision make a principle well established for the police? I mean, do they have to jump and salute us when we decide a case? Can't they wait for the Supreme Court?
Well, Your Honor, your decision out of this court is the law of the Seventh Circuit until the Supreme Court would overturn that. So it would be my opinion that at the time this court
I'm dubious about that. I would think police could take the position that if they disagree with a decision by us, and it's, you know, debatable, it doesn't follow directly from a Supreme Court decision or from a language of the Constitution or anything like that, they can say, well, you know, we're going to wait and see whether this becomes the law of the United States.
Well, again, Your Honor, I don't know. I still take the position that once this court hands down a decision that is the law until the Supreme Court has in fact changed it. The police department does not have the discretion, nor does the district attorney, nor the U.S. attorney.
We decide cases. We're not supposed. We don't lay down law for the Seventh Circuit in a practical sense. People assume we'll follow our cases, but.
Well, again, Your Honor, the issue is what's the rights of Mr. Mikituck.
But there's also, as Judge Rovner was saying, the timing issue here. And I actually had a third point, which is why this is so bad that at least on Leon kinds of grounds, the search of the vehicles has to be thrown out. They found all sorts of stuff everywhere they searched, as I recall.
Yes, they did, Your Honor. I guess the best way of saying this is, again, Mr. Mikituck also pled guilty, so from a hindsight standpoint, it would make sense that, gee, he pled, so therefore...
Well, but he preserved this issue.
That's correct, Your Honor, but the facts in this case are, if you take a look at how the search warrant is drafted, I would posit that if you took out the name Mr. Mikituck and put in the names of your fellow justices underneath how this search warrant came down, The officer gave a, he talked to a drug dealer who had just broken in on, without any further corroboration, and without any indication within the affidavit that Mr. Mikituck was known in the community to be trafficking in drugs or in any way have any criminal activity.
But this isn't a random CI who just says, you know, I was standing across the street and I watched this. Mr. Soltow was fairly specific that things were being taken to the Bob Mikituck residence and that he stores things, stores this meth in vehicles, et cetera, et cetera, all these things that you put there. So, you know, you don't have to have proof beyond a reasonable doubt in an affidavit. You need some details. It's not just kind of canned, I'm a law enforcement officer, I know all about meth. There's some specificity here.
There's some specificity, and again, Mr. Soltow, either how you would look at him, either had the reason to tell the truth or tell a lie, but again, there's
so
no...
So why isn't it against his penal interest? I mean, there certainly are conspiracy statutes that we all see constantly in this area. Don't you think these statements were against Mr. Soltow's penal interest?
They could be viewed as against his penal interest. They also could be viewed as he's now helping the police officers, and therefore he might catch a break. So that way you can look at it either way. But again, it would seem to me that...
He doesn't even need a break unless it's against his penal interest.
That's correct, Your Honor. But he's already caught red-handed. He's caught with the methamphetamine. Again, the police officer in this instance could have done a number of things. He could have observed Mr. Mikituck's residence. He could have gone and talked to Mr. Mikituck.
Would it have done him to frame Soltow, right? So he confesses his part, and then suppose he says sent the police on a wild goose chase, and he picks some name at random to blame as a co-conspirator. How is that going to help him?
Help Mr. Soltow?
Yeah.
It very well might not, Your Honor, but again...
Well, it might really harm him, actually.
Well, people, when they're caught in those circumstances, Your Honor, say an awful lot of things, and again, the affidavit itself is the issue that you look at. Again, the police officer could...
But the question is, really, what more investigating would the police have to do? They catch this fellow, and there's no question that, you know, they searched his residence properly or what have you. They catch him red-handed, and he tells the police he and this Mikituck stole it, and he gives the details and the this and the that and explains about the 5-gallon buckets and so on. What would make one skeptical about that? You think the most natural thing in the world was, well, get the warrant, now search Mikituck's residence.
Well, again, the affidavit itself, the officer apparently did not ask the follow-up questions such as where in the residence does Mr. Mikituck, if Mr. Mikituck had manufactured at the residence. The affidavit states that the material for manufacturing was kept in vehicles which Mr. Mikituck stored at his residence. Based on that, they got a search warrant for the entire residence, not merely a garage, not merely a place where the manufacturing was taking place. The officer then, without any further...
I don't understand that. I mean, it seems to me, if you say this person has methamphetamine manufacturing materials in his garage, you'd think you would expect to find money or what have you in the house. Also, I would think you'd get a search warrant for the entire house.
Well, that's making an assumption that the affidavit, the officer could have merely have asked that question of Mr. Soltow, provided that in the affidavit.
But the affidavit says that Soltow went and stole the anhydrous ammonia from the Mikituck residence, so unless we think the residence means these pickup trucks or whatever they were, the vehicles, it's not the most detailed description of what's in the residence that I could imagine, but it implicates the residence.
But again, the principal source of Mr. Soltow's allegation is the vehicles that Mr. Mikituck stored at the residence. Again, all the officer had to do was where in the residence or where does Mikituck manufacture. He can be manufacturing in the farm field. He can be manufacturing in somebody else's house. Obviously, there was manufacturing going on at Mr. Soltow. So the fact that they get a search warrant that carries it all the way over, again, without more, that's very easy. All the officer has to do is ask the questions and put in the search warrant. The problem with search warrants is they're ex parte.
I mean, are you going to say that if he said he manufactures the methamphetamine in his bathroom, they couldn't get a warrant to search the entire house?
If you said in the bathroom at that point, Your Honor, then it's in the residence itself, and that's where the manufacturing takes place.
What difference does it make if it's in the garage or in the residence or in the house?
Well, again, Your Honor, my argument is that it's a Fourth Amendment question. Mr. Mikituck has certain rights, and again, all the ex parte nature of search warrants are that the defendant has no input in the search warrants. The only time a defendant has any input is when the search warrant is executed and when he's brought before the court. And so that's the first time these issues can be raised. Again, so the benefits all given to the state or in this place the police officers when they're in the best position to, in fact, do it correctly. And all we can do is come back at this point and make the argument that they did it wrong. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dyer. Mr. Anderson?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Robert Anderson. I have the privilege of representing the United States in this matter. As to the issues with regard to the search warrant, two factors, whether it was overbroad and whether there was enough probable cause for the officers to rely on that in good faith under Leon, it's clear that it was not overbroad in its scope because there was a sufficient reference throughout the affidavit, although, granted, the affidavit is short and terse. There's reference to the methamphetamine manufacture taking place at the premises, storage of lab materials there that are necessary for the production and manufacture of methamphetamine, reference to, from Mr. Salto, his personal observation of equipment in vehicles stored on the property, which all made it reasonable to believe that there were items connected with the drug manufacture on the premises. And given the nature of methamphetamine, and you produce methamphetamine with chemicals, with equipment, with a recipe for the methamphetamine. It was reasonable, as the court concluded, the magistrate concluded, that there would be notes, recipes perhaps, a product that was finished, that was stored in the premises in the house, because this was all...
What was in the house, actually? I mean, Mr. Mikituck has put in the appendix to his brief the return of the officer, and the paragraph seemed to go by a place where the things were found. So the first paragraph is about the silver-colored Chevy pickup, which I guess he's not attacking. And the second paragraph is about the blue Buick. And then we've got these various sheds, the white shed, the yellow shed. I'm not sure what was inside the house. And does this matter?
There were items in the shed, which are
right,
analogous to
the
residence.
Right, are we saying the sheds are the same as the house? Or what are we doing?
Yeah, the sheds are similar because the affidavit...
The affidavit doesn't say anything about sheds.
Doesn't say anything about sheds. But so just as it authorizes a search of the residence, it authorizes a search of those sheds where this material or the recipes could be as well. And there were things found at those sheds. I don't recall specifically whether there was something found in the residence itself.
This return doesn't, unless I... I've read it too quickly. Doesn't actually seem to focus on the interior of the residence, which might be a different issue. But
I'm sorry.
Your position has to be that this affidavit kind of generically covers everything: the vehicles, the yellow two-story house, and outbuildings. Outbuildings would be the sheds. Sheds, I presume. That's what the search warrant specifies.
Right.
And
correct.
The affidavit itself, although it
talks about
the residence and it talks about the vehicles, it can be expanded to include these outbuildings as well.
Yes, just under the same theory as the case I cited in my brief, Mallon represents. There was a marijuana grow in that case that was on the premises, and marijuana being grown outside, that authorized the officers to search for evidence inside the house as well, even though there was no specific reference to items known to be in the house. It's not whether there is a certainty that there's going to be something found in that location, or more likely than not, but whether it's reasonable to seek evidence in that location.
Could we talk about Korth?
I'm sorry?
Could we talk about Korth?
Yes, Your Honor.
How should we factor in the fact that Korth originated in your U.S. Attorney's office?
In our Western District, but
right.
it was an entirely another county, another district. This
it involves the same United States Attorney's office.
Now, that would be a significant fact if the law enforcement officers from this rural county, which they themselves are not involved in court and had no knowledge of court, if they came to us and sought a federal search warrant, and we went to our magistrate and presented this, and we knew of court, then there could be imputed knowledge, not only on our part, but we should have communicated that to the officers as well. But
do you
here,
think state law enforcement officers should be held to a different standard than federal law enforcement officers? I'm not sure I understand your argument.
You just essentially said that. You just essentially said that you hold yourself responsible for knowing about the current state of federal law, including Seventh Circuit cases, to the extent they bear on that, but that the state officers don't have to know about that. So a flimsier showing is okay, or more warrants saved on Leon grounds are okay for the state officers? That's a very subjective standard.
No, what I'm saying is it's not fair, it's not reasonable to hold those officers to knowledge where they don't have a vehicle.
You're saying they're these, you know, rural guys, and they don't.
They didn't go to it.
They don't.
What if you have somebody in your office who just doesn't like reading Court of Appeals opinions, and so that person doesn't happen to know about what's happened in the last 6 months? Is that excused too? Is it really the subjective knowledge of the responsible official?
No.
No, it's an objective standard.
No, but the question is whether, it is at what point are you going to apply a legal principle, knowledge of a legal principle, to someone that's far removed?
Well, but they're not far removed. They constantly refer cases to the federal prosecutors, and at this point, Korth was 5 months old, and
we frequently get cases from rural counties, but not on that frequent
but
a basis.
But now,
from
is it
county.
Your position that these government people, prosecutors, federal or state, are required to treat a new decision of the Court of Appeals as the law? Or can they say, well, this is one case, we're not sure they'll be followed by other courts, so we don't think this states an established legal principle?
Well, for one thing, they had gone to a state court judge and gotten the issuance of the search warrant from the state court judge. And
that's not my question.
That they should consider this the law with respect to anything they do, even if they're seeking a state search warrant?
Well, the state is, of course, governed by federal law also, right?
But the state can make an independent determination. The
well,
state
so
court
can
might
the attorney
disagree
general.
With...
So can the Attorney General. The Attorney General can say, I don't agree with this court's decision.
But even the Attorney General, as I recall, doesn't disavow cases outside the circuit. They certainly could be non-acquiescent circuit to circuit.
What is the Justice Department's policy on this?
Oh, well, any local jurisdiction is responsible for the law in federal or state law. But we have to look at whether this is really a well-settled principle. That
yes. Now, if someone came to you, could be state officer, could be federal FBI officer, wouldn't matter, came to you and said, are we bound by this court's decision? What would you tell them?
Oh, any officer that would come to me and ask about the analysis of probable cause and the court's decision, I would say absolutely we are bound by it, by this precedent.
So that's your policy?
Yes.
Okay. Well, if you're bound, then I should think the state officers were bound.
But the question is the officers, whether they had good faith in
so
execution of
that. That's a different
that.
Point. How soon they have to find out?
They are bound by it. They are bound by the probable cause determination.
So how long do they have to find out? What's a reasonable length of time for a law enforcement officer to, you know, respond to new developments in the law? What would be a reasonable amount of time?
It would depend on the circumstances. Certainly, where this case, by 5 months had not been explored, had not been examined extensively in any opinions. It just existed. There's less probability that that has gotten out into the mainstream or into the grapevine for those officers to be knowledgeable of.
Can you see some really horrible consequences of what you just said? 5 months later, 4 months later.
Yeah, but if a principal comes down and it
disseminated. How long will it take you all to do Booker, for instance, once it really comes down?
I think everyone's aware of Booker. And
Blake. Okay. Well, thank you very much. And Mr. Garr, you were appointed, were you not? Your time expired, didn't it? Or did you have All right, you want a minute.
Just in response to the questions that were posed to Mr. Anderson, again, this was a state court case. It could have remained in the state court. So in other words, the issues of whether or not this meant state constitutional problems could have been very easily handled by the United States Attorney's Office saying, keep it in state court. What we have here then is a dichotomy where this court has passed a decision in court that applies to the federal courts, but now they're trying to get this in by saying, oh, gee, it was a state court case.
So that was his weakest argument.
Pardon?
That was his weakest argument.
Anyway, nothing else, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. And you were appointed. Well, we thank you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of the client, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.